There's so many reasons to stay. People think if you're unhappy, you just walk out. But when you have a house with somebody and your families are intertwined and, you know, there's financial reasons. And like we had a son, you don't get married to get divorced and you want to stay together. But
have you ever felt like you're walking on eggshells, constantly trying to please someone who never seems satisfied?
Questioning your own reality, a relationship that leaves you emotionally drained and mentally exhausted.
If this sounds familiar, you might be in a narcissistic relationship. We sat down with Dana Diaz, the author of Grasping for Air, The Stronghold of Narcissistic Abuse.
She grew up with an abusive mother and stepfather and later found herself in a relationship with a narcissistic partner.
You'll gain a deeper understanding of what narcissistic abuse looks like, how it affects its victims, and most importantly, how you can break free from its grip.
Whether you or someone you know has been or is currently in a narcissistic relationship, this episode is for you.
Stick around until the end to find out how you can identify the traits of a narcissist. Welcome to Rewrite Your Story, the podcast where change begins with you.
We're your hosts, Stephen and Charlene.
As professional coaches and mentors trained in various modalities, we have helped hundreds of people
bridge the gap between the person they are
and the person they want to be.
We bring you conversations with real people who have overcome real setbacks.
You will walk away with practical steps to find more clarity, alignment, and success in any area you want to improve.
So join us and discover how you have the power to overcome, to change, and to rewrite your story.
So pick up the pen. Your new chapter starts now.
Dana, you're the author of a book called Grasping for Air, The Stronghold of Narcissistic Abuse. Now, that in itself has, the title tells us so much. In your own words, how would you describe a narcissist? And do you believe that a narcissist is born or they're a product of their environment growing up?
Good questions. Narcissism is so complicated. On a very, very basic level, just a simplistic definition, it's somebody who has just an innate need to feel important and superior. And again, that is a very simple description. And I say that because I feel like it comes from a very deep-seated insecurity. I think they don't like themselves. I think they have issues with who they are and they don't want to face that. So they look for other people to project back to them the idea of who they would like to be, if that makes any sense. It's just that some go to, you know, more severe tactics to try to, you know, fulfill that ego. As far as where they come from, you know, there is a debate on that because there is that nature versus nurture theory. I'm having a hard time. I've read a lot of things and talked to people about the idea about if a narcissist is born a narcissist. I just can't jump on that bandwagon. I think, at least in my experience from the narcissists, and I've known many that I've experienced, I feel like it comes from that insecurity. And I feel like they either were made to feel so extraordinarily important by their parents, like to a point where it's not just encouraging your child to have a healthy self-esteem, but actually making your child feel like they really are above other people, to where they have that sense of entitlement. And I'm thinking of somebody right now that I know. We all know that person that honestly has no idea that they're just like everybody else and that they don't deserve, you know, extra special treatment. Or on the other side of that, and this is in the case of both my stepfather and my ex-husband, that they were, or at least they felt, perceived that they were neglected in some way, maybe emotionally, or, you know, they just didn't have that support from their parental unit or their guardians, whoever raised them. Because my stepfather came, he was actually abandoned by both parents, he and his four siblings, and he was only a baby when that happened. So he grew up in the foster system and was abused. And I don't think he had that kind of, you know, support and a healthy upbringing. And my ex just always felt very slighted because his older sister was definitely the golden child and favored, and he was not. So, you know, there was always kind of that chip on his shoulder. So he needed to feel like this, you know, I mean, I had to really pep him up and make him feel really good about himself. It's just that it gets exhausting when you're not getting that back in a relationship and you're not getting anything. You're just getting abused in every way possible. But, You know, there's other theories. I've even heard people, there's a big group of people that think they're aliens. And I don't believe that either. But, you know, who knows? What do I know? But I'm definitely on the nurture side of the nature versus nurture issue.
Yeah. Good point. What was your breaking point that you said, that's it, I need to leave?
There were a lot of them. There were a lot of them. And, you know, the hard part is that that's what people don't understand, because most people don't believe victims of abuse because we don't speak up. We never want to face the consequences of exposing our abuser because we're the ones that have to go home to them and they're not going to like being exposed. Mm-hmm. And there's so many reasons to stay. People think if you're unhappy, you just walk out. But when you have a house with somebody and your families are intertwined and, you know, there's financial reasons. And like we had a son, you don't get married to get divorced and you want to stay together. But it just, for me, there were so many times I should have, you know, yeah, like I said, when a crowbar gets swung at your head, probably a good time to walk out. And there were so many other things. But unfortunately for me, it was when I became physically ill. I'll never forget it. It was November 3rd of 2018. I can remember that night. We just had another terrible, terrible incident between the two of us. And, you know, it was just a really bad night. And it wasn't that it was so different than any of the other times that we fought or that anything happened. But I think that was the breaking point for my body physically, that it just, I couldn't emotionally handle it anymore. So then my body just finally broke for me. And from that night, 2 weeks after that, I had lost almost 20 pounds for no reason. And that was in 2 weeks. I had dropped down to 93 pounds. I was skeletal. Looks great in a bikini, but it's not healthy. It was not good. And I couldn't breathe. And I had about 24 symptoms. My vision was going. I couldn't see straight. I was blacking out constantly, passed out. My heart, I was having arrhythmia. My whole body was in this complete flux of chaos. It took over a year. Started with my family doctor, got sent to this specialist, that specialist. Everyone wanted to throw a pill at me for a symptom. I needed to know what was wrong, though. Long story short, they got me with Mayo Clinic, which here in the U.S., I'm not sure if they're abroad, but they're the be-all, end-all of medical everything. They took a cortisol test. Cortisol is a stress hormone, for those who don't know. It runs through your body. It should always be somewhere between 100 and 700, depending on the time of day, whether you're sleeping or not, whether you're having a stressful reaction or not. Well, they did the test and they called and said, we think we compromised your labs because there's no way that your results are this high. Okay, we did another cortisol test. They said, well, actually, your levels are that high because both times my levels were over 2,500, 24/7, every day of the week. And they said that it had been running through me for so many years. You know, again, you have my childhood and then all through this marriage, 45 years of my life, that I had been living under this kind of stress, that it actually had caused me this rare lung disease called upper airway resistance syndrome. It sounds like a lung disease. It's actually classified as a sleep disorder, which is weird. But the doctor, the neurologist, said it's like having COPD and fibromyalgia all at once. But they also saw that my body, with all this cortisol running through it, my white blood cell count had been completely diminished and I was having all these autoimmune reactions because my white blood cells thought it had to eradicate something, so it killed themselves off. So, I mean, it's so hard for me to believe that living with all this stuff in me and keeping it in really just, I mean, it almost killed me because at the worst point, the doctor said, and this was my breaking point, the doctor sat me down and said, your body is shutting down. At that point, this was at the end of 2019, I was wearing a backpack oxygen machine with a mask just so I could keep my oxygen levels above 83%. And to give people perspective, during COVID, they said if your oxygen fell to 93% or less, that was a sign of COVID. My oxygen levels, we were just trying to keep them above 83%. I was very weak. I was very sick. I could barely just walk or, my muscles were stiff. I mean, I felt like a corpse that was just walking around trying to get through every day. And that was when I finally just said, okay. I just remember laying down that night and thinking, okay, Dana, where did we go wrong? Like, what do I want? This is not what I want. I felt like I had been living somebody else's life because I had been. This man had been dictating to me how things were going to be to the point of what I would wear and what I could not wear and how I would do my hair and what lipstick I could wear and what I could eat and that I couldn't read. And I didn't even have a smartphone. He didn't like me on the internet because, God forbid, I read and educated myself or had outside influence. You know, he moved me to this small podunk town. You know, and here I have this degree in journalism and psychology, and I'm scrubbing toilets for a living because he wanted me to clean houses with his friend's wife. You know, he was trying to contain me and basically keep me in a cage, and it was killing me. I was miserable. I just couldn't do it anymore. I wanted to be noble. I wanted to stay for my son. But at that point, my son was getting ready to be a senior in high school, and he was old enough and he knew who his father was, and he hadn't seen or heard even half of what had gone on in that house and still has no idea of most of it. But it was time for me to put me first. And so that was when I finally, took me 45 years of my life, but I finally had enough self-respect to say, no more, I'm done with this and I got to get out of here. And it's a beautiful thing because it was awful, the ending. And we had the two most violent incidents between us after the divorce. But it's only been 3 years and 3 months as I sit here today. And the miraculous thing is that about the same time I ended my marriage, I also cut ties for the final time with my mother and stepfather, who hadn't physically abused me, obviously, in my adulthood, but I was still enduring the verbal and the gaslighting and the, you know, I had to just cut them all out. I had to be done. And it was awful. There was definitely a mourning time because losing all these people and all the family members that sided with all three of them, you know, I felt shunned and exiled and banished, but I am at a healthy weight. I don't even know the last time I've used my oxygen machine. I can breathe on my own. I don't even have to measure my oxygen every day. And I'm feeling good. I mean, I still have moments, you know, where I'll have a symptom here or there, but I'm good. And it's just sad to me that I lived so miserably, not just mentally, but physically, because of what people were doing to me. And they were doing it intentionally. And that's what hurts even more. But I'm doing really good. And so, you know, there's something to be said for the toxicity, not just in the world. It's not just in the air you breathe and the things you put in your mouth. It's definitely more in people than anything else.
Absolutely. And from what I can hear, like, a lot of people say that, you know, they stay in that relationship, like you said, and a lot of times it's because they're made to feel like they're the ones to blame for the other person's behavior towards.
Yes, it's funny you say that because I'm remarried now. That's another happy to a longtime friend. I've known his family almost 20 years. I'm in a good place, but he read my book. You would think when you write a book that your husband actually comes along on the ride, and he supported it, but he hadn't read it until it was actually published. And when I'll never forget when he finished it, he closed it and he looked at me, he said, "You got blamed for everything." He said, "Everything was your fault." And I said, "Yes, even things I wasn't even present for and had no part in, but that was my childhood too. I was the scapegoat. I am the ultimate scapegoat." And it's tough to carry that burden because the reality is, And you can appreciate this, Charlene, from a psychological perspective. I think a lot of times abuse victims, and definitely in my case, both in childhood and in my marriage, I think what helped me in my healing is that I realized that the abuse, however it was inflicted upon me, was really my abusers being unwilling to take accountability for their own healing. They were putting all their unhealed trauma on me to carry. They wanted me to carry that burden. And I had to release it, which meant releasing them, because still to this day, all three of them, They don't think that anything's wrong. You know, God forbid they get any mental health, you know, assistance in any way. They think it's me. I'm the one that's crazy. And you know what? They affected me, but I'm not crazy. Nor will I ever say, I don't like when I hear people say I'm broken or I'm damaged. You know, I was affected mentally and physically in terrible ways, but I will never call myself broken or damaged because I understand the value of self-talk. I have enough of my stepfather's reel going through my head that the last thing I'm going to do is sit here and call myself names and put labels on myself that I don't need to, you know, there's no justification. I'm just me. And we are all flawed in some way. We are all affected by people and by circumstances in some way, but that doesn't invalidate anybody as, you know, as far as their existence. Nobody is broken or damaged. We're just all a product of where we came from and what we've been through.
Dana, talk to us about how you rebuilt your self-esteem and how you rebuilt your self-worth. Because I have the image, and I'm not sure, Charlene, if you did this in one of our workshops where you got a piece of paper and you tore bits at it and it was incomplete and things like that. So how did you redesign that piece of paper?
Yeah. I love that, by the way. It was, you know, that night that I asked myself, you know, after the doctor sat me down and said, your body's shutting down and all this. And I kind of thought about, like, you know, what do I want in life? That for me was the turning point. Because when I asked myself that very simple question, what do I want? I knew immediately the answer, and it had never changed. I wanted the same things that I had wanted when I was 18 years old and I left my childhood home. I wanted to go be a writer. I wanted to be a speaker. That's what I did in college. That's what I studied. I wanted to still somehow help victims of abuse. That had not changed. So, and I also wanted to travel. I love traveling. I love experience. You know, I mean, you can look at pictures and watch YouTube, but I like to go and see. And so, you know, I want to eat the food and stand on the mountain and do all that stuff. And none of that was going to happen if I stayed in that cage, you know, that this man had put me in. So the thing about the funny thing about the way our minds work is once you see something and you feel so strongly about it, like I couldn't unsee that. I had the vision because then I'm working and I'm thinking, wow, I do want to travel. Where do I want? I have a list of places I want to go, you know? And so then I'm imagining it. Then I finally did get that smartphone after I divorced that guy. And I'm on my phone, you know, looking up Australia and the UK and Italy and just looking up and the places I can go see and, you know, what does TripAdvisor say I should do and where, what can I eat there? And it, I mean, look at me now. I'm even seeing me on the screen, like it lights me up. And I think that's what we lose, you know, whether it's in a relationship or in a situation, we lose our sense of ourselves. And I think that's the key is just reconnecting with what we want, who, because that kind of tells you who you are. But it was also in the little things in everyday life. You know, once he was out of the house, it was, you know, I remember, you know, just little things like, okay, he didn't like me wearing, you know, that dress. So I wore that dress and I liked it. And I liked having, you know, that lipstick that he would tell me I looked like a whore. Well, I liked it though. And I wore it and people would tell me I looked nice and, you know, just doing the, it sounds silly. And I know a lot of people don't think that these things qualify as self-care, but I would argue that they do because I don't think it matters what it is. If you want to have a pint of ice cream for dinner instead of cooking up, you know, the proper meat inside, if it makes your soul happy, if it fills your little happy jar in your head, do it. Because that's who we are, and it's okay to be who we are. I think we sometimes put ourselves in these little boxes of what we should do and what we should, you know, and all these appropriate things, and to hell with it. Just be who you are. Because, I mean, if you're living your life authentically, and that's what I learned to do, I was just doing what Dana wanted. And it's not a selfish thing, but when you are living truly to who you are and authentically standing on your own ground and being you, there is nothing more freeing than that. And when you are giving yourself that permission to do that, I think you're exuding a contentment, a joy that you're not going to find in anything else. And that in itself uplifts you. You know, that's where your self-esteem starts, just in being who you are. Because, I mean, let's be real, even just something as simple as like, if you have to, well, not, we don't have to, but if you go somewhere that you really didn't want to go, are you really going to have that good of a time? I mean, you can, you might, but, you know, your mind has to be feeling it, you know? So I think that if you're doing the things that make you happy and doing the things that fulfill your soul, that's the life that you're going to be happy in. And it's unfortunate. Sometimes you have to, you know, move past people you care about and move beyond situations that aren't serving you. But it's not a selfish thing to be in your best, you know, living your best life and being in your best mental and physical state, because that's all going to come together when you're living authentically.
Dana, one of the things we talk about is that healing happens in community, but you are also broken in community. Mm-hmm. And that puts a lot of issues around how do you then trust a new community? Tell us about that for you.
That's a really good question. No, I'm glad you asked that, because that is something people tend to isolate after a traumatic situation, or even after getting hurt in a relationship of any type. People tend to isolate, they distrust. Certainly, I went through those things. But when I was ready to start taking care of myself and trying to fix the triggers and learn how to self-regulate and go through the therapy for that, I realized that staying at home and avoiding people is not going to heal anything. Because I could learn all the tools. I could learn that, okay, if somebody triggers me or is upsetting me, breathe, count to 10, you know, put your hand in the cold water, all these things you learn to do to regulate. Well, if nobody's triggering me, how am I going to learn how to do that? You know? And so it was a tough thing when I'm in therapy and the therapist just point blank, you know, she was a tough one, but it was good. I needed a kick in the ass. But she said, you know, just start slowly. She's like, I'm not telling you to just jump in the deep end. But if you know you're going into a situation, you're feeling anxiety while you're getting ready to go, you're sweating profusely and your breathing's off because you really don't want to be around this person and your hands are shaking. She's like, just breathe, but go. You have to be around the people that are going to make things difficult for you. But she said, do it like, you know, it's kind of like how narcissists push the boundaries. Just do a little at a time. Dip your toe in the pool. You know, you don't have to go for 2 hours. You can go for 10 minutes. You know, so I learned little things like driving separately from whoever I was going with, just so that if I started to really feel uncomfortable, I knew I had kind of that safety net to remove myself. Things like that. But it's amazing that even just entering into another love relationship after something like that, a lot of people think, oh, I got to be alone. And I did too. I was going to go be alone and live in the mountains in North Carolina somewhere with a dog. I had this fantasy that was going to make me happy. But I'm glad that my current husband, you know, we'd known each other for a very long time and I knew his family. So we already had that established trust. But I was still leery about a romantic relationship because I'm like, honestly, after my whole life experience, I wasn't sure I was capable of having a healthy relationship with anybody romantically. But again, I think if you're with the right person, I had to be in those romantic, you know, in a romantic relationship to be triggered by things, to be able to learn how to resolve them. Like, for example, I mean, living with narcissists my whole life, I mean, I dreaded if there was like disapproval or disagreement because, I mean, I never knew what the consequence would be. And sometimes I'd get the silent treatment for like 3-4 weeks. It was awful. And I was terrified of that. But like one of the most wonderful situations that happened between me and my current husband is that I remember one day he came home and it was just, we all have those days where we kind of take a few steps back and, you know, he came to hug me and I'm like, no, I hate myself today. Like I don't even like being, you know, being myself right now and all this and that. And he's like, yeah, you've been a little rough today. I didn't like you too much today either, but I still love you. And I was like, what? Like, hold on a second. Like, in my realm of experience, that wasn't possible. And we could even have disagreements, but not fight, if that makes any sense. We respectfully disagree. There's all these like healthy things happening that I would have never experienced or known possible if I wasn't. And I'm not telling everybody, go get married to the next person that comes along like I did. But you can certainly go out and date. It's just a meal. It's just a movie. It's just a walk in the park with a coffee. But you have to put yourself in those situations to be able to handle yourself going forward in a healthier way.
That's awesome.
And that's really great advice. And I'm wondering, like, what kind of advice could you give someone to look out for? Like, what are the red flags that someone can look out for before they get into a relationship to know if they're going to be with someone who's narcissistic?
Oh, there's so many. I will say, though, primarily, and I don't care, call it a narcissist or not, and it's not so much a red flag, but my biggest thing I tell people is trust your gut. Because we all come from a different background, different cultural experience, different, you know, what's a red flag to me might not be one to you. But your gut, even if there's nothing visible or nothing you can put your finger on, if you just don't feel right about somebody, listen to that. I always tell people, we meet people sometimes, you know, and we like them, we have no issue, but we know we're not going to be best friends, right? You know, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's okay not to connect with everybody. But then you meet some people that you just click with. You're like, where have you been all my life? Like, I think you're my twin from another mother. Like, you, we were meant to, and they're like your soulmate, whether it's a friend or, but we don't apply that to romantic relationships, though, which is weird to me. We don't wait for that person we click with. We try so hard to force situations, you know, we go back to like my mother, enabling, tolerating, excusing, because we want that love so badly. And who doesn't? We all want it. But my gosh, we need to learn a little more patience. But red flags, some big ones, I think all around for anybody. If somebody ever insults you, demeans you, belittles you, or you see them doing that, you know, even to the waitress or to somebody else in your presence, this is somebody who has to make other people feel like crap to feel better about themselves. That's not a situation I would want anybody in. I think that person has some fixing to do, you know, and there might be somebody that's okay with that, but I don't think that's okay. Certainly somebody that is controlling, if they start controlling or trying to tell you what to eat, what to wear, who your friends can be, who you can go out with, stuff like that. I'm telling you, as somebody who has finally opened the cage door and been released out in the wild, I don't need anybody telling me what I can eat and that, you know, I can't wear this and wear that. Like, we're all adults. Unless you have some physical or mental impairment that requires somebody to guide you in those ways, which I would like to think most people don't, I have that situation. Why do you want somebody dictating your life to you? Why isn't it okay to just be you? And that's probably my last red flag, is if somebody makes you feel bad about being who you are or thinking what you think or having, you know, purple or red hair. I can't tell what you have, Charlene, but it's beautiful, by the way. But whatever it is, like, who cares? Like, if they don't love you for who you are and accept you for who you are, move on. You can be friends if it's not that, I mean, if that's what you want, and you can never talk to the person again, but you don't need somebody making you feel bad about who you are. You're just fine who you are, and somebody's going to love you perfectly, wonderfully fine, exactly as you are, and not going to want to change you.
That's really good. And I'm just thinking, one of the probably key factors is learning to love yourself first before you get into a relationship, right? Yes. Like, learning to work on yourself, love yourself instead of
yes.
Your
own. Yeah. And I think there is something to be said for that. I mean, we've all heard that, but I think that's what made a difference for me too, is when I finally started, you know, I don't know if I loved myself right at the end of my first marriage, but I respected myself enough, you know, to remove myself. And then I started kind of blooming in my own right. And, you know, I'm still working on it. I can't come out of 45 years, you know, of being diminished and squashed and subdued and all that, and just suddenly be like, here I am and I'm fabulous. But I am learning that actually it's okay. I'm not a selfish or conceited person to look in the mirror and be like, wow, I look good in this outfit. Or I don't know, I published a book. Oh my God, like that's phenomenal. Like, you know, to pat myself on the back and say, good job, because I would have never done that before. And so I think there is something to be said for being able to acknowledge those things in yourself, because if you like yourself, then other people are going to be attracted to that. I mean, let's be real. Nobody wants to like hang out with the person who's like, poor me, I suck. I don't want to be, you know, I mean, we all have friends like that and we love them, but it's not who you want to hang out with and, you know, go to dinner with. We got to be a little more positive, but I think the positive self-talk is a good place to start, even if it's fake, you know, just to be like, you know what, you know, for me, it started like that. I had a little chalkboard at my desk that I would just every day force myself to write something nice to myself, because that inner child in me needed somebody to just give her a little bit of something. But it helped to have my husband too, because, you know, this guy is amazing. He doesn't, you know, like my ex, I always use this example. The only nice thing my ex ever said to me was, you're beautiful. You're beautiful. You look good. But he didn't like me as a person. He even told me he didn't like me all the time. My husband now, he rarely compliments me physically. He doesn't care if I'm fat, skinny. He doesn't care what hair. I mean, he just loves me. He'll compliment like, oh, I love the way you wrote this on that page, you know, that book or in your blog or, you know, or, oh, I love how you cook these stuffed peppers for dinner, you know, putting this and that in them. And you know what I mean? He speaks to me and who I am, not to the outward facade. And so like, I feel like he sees me. And I mean, isn't that great when somebody can really see to your soul and know you as a person? And it's not about what's on the outside, because, I mean, the outside fades and it can go away in a heartbeat. But you want somebody to connect with on a deeper level. And that's where that is.
Dana, if someone's picking up your book, what can they expect from it?
Oh, well, trigger warning. There's a lot in it. I don't hold back. I think what separates my book from the others there are very few books out there speaking about narcissistic experience, because again, most people would rather write how to avoid a narcissist or write about narcissists without speaking to the experience that they had with their abusers. I go real deep. It's a humorous joke around here is that I type 90 words a minute. So everything thought that goes through my head gets put down and into the chapters of these books. But I think that's the real aspect of it. And I think that's why people are connecting with the book, because I reveal every thought in my head, every step along the way. And some of the thoughts aren't nice. Like when he was driving his motorcycle down the driveway and I'm thinking, I hope you get in a crash and die, you bastard. I mean, is it nice? No. And that's not who I am. But God, when you're in that situation and you're just looking for a way out, I mean, you get desperate to that point. And I think that, like I said, that's what people are connecting with, is that it's not always nice. And I wasn't always an angel. It takes two to create any dynamic. And he pushed me. And you know, I didn't like who he turned me into. But it's a very real story. Yeah. It's real. It's very toxic. But it needed to be told, because apparently too many people are in this situation, and I think it makes them feel better to know that there's nothing wrong with them. But they certainly, I've also been helping people get the strength to move on, because I think they need to know that it's going to be okay on the other side.
I love that, Dana. And what advice could you give to someone who wants to rewrite their own story today?
I think it goes back to what I said helped me, is just ask yourself that one simple question. What do I want? What do I want? Because I guarantee everybody knows that answer. And I want people to answer that without, don't think about money, don't think about intellect, don't think about resources or possibilities. Just what do you want? I mean, you want to go to the moon? I mean, who knows? Maybe, you know, we'll get there. But everybody knows what they want. It's just that nobody has ever asked them that, and nobody has ever really allowed them to pursue that because of whatever bounds have been put around them. Although I would argue now, looking back, we're the ones that put the bounds on ourselves. Yeah. So ask yourself what you want and vision it. A lot of people talk about vision boards. I think it's great. Put the picture of the house that you cut out from a magazine up there, because I guarantee you when you're seeing that every day, you know, or that picture of that baby because you want a baby or whatever it is, you will start even unconsciously moving towards those goals. Because if you want it and you really want it, you'll find a way.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting that you said that, because this just 2 days ago, we were having lunch with someone and they were like quite small in their goal setting abilities. And as I think said, as long as I've got this, this and this, I'm happy. And we're like challenging them. And he was like, what? So you think I should write a list of like we challenged him to write a list of 100 things they want. And he said, so what, I could go to the moon? I'm like, yeah, why not? And you've just mentioned that as well. We don't know.
You know what? I wanted, like I said, to write. I wanted to travel. And my third answer to myself was I wanted to be married. Because I wanted to be somebody's wife. I just wanted to be happy. And I am 3 months and three years and 3 months out of that relationship. And this year I published my first book. I'm sorry, that was last year. This year, I will be publishing the next two. They're already written. We're in the process. I have two more books coming out. I am remarried. Our first year of marriage, we went on 9 trips around the world together. Last year, we only did 5. We got to work on this year, but publishing costs are high. But I would have never, 3 years and 3 months ago, I would have never thought I would have even crossed one of those things off my list.
Wow.
I wasn't going to stop. When I had the opportunity, and plus I just turned 48. Like, I mean, let's be real. I don't know how much time any of us have left, but I had to get moving on my goals. But I did all that in 3 years. Yeah. So if I can do that, and I'm living in Podunk, USA in the middle of cornfields, and I can do this, I'm pretty sure that person you talk to will go to the moon. It might be a few years. It might be longer than 3 years, but you don't know. You don't know. But we should all at least entertain what we want, because that idea even that we can is what gives us that power and that goal, that focus on our potential and everything that lies ahead of us. And we all need to have hope of something.
That's wonderful. Dana, if you could go back now and rewrite your life story, what would that look like?
I'm going to be one of those people that always says that I think I'm truly living my purpose now. I think I had to go through all that so that I could use my given talents of speaking and writing to connect with people who are still in that experience. But the only thing that I wish were different, you know, this sounds weird, but I mean, who doesn't want their mommy? You know, I wish that my mother and I could have figured out a way to have any kind of relationship, because I mean, it's hard to be a girl and not have your mom. So that's the only thing I wish was different. But everything else, it would be hard to change one thing without the domino effect, because I love my son and I wouldn't have had anything to write a book about. And, you know, there's so many things that would have changed if I changed anything, but I want my mommy still, you know.
And Dana, thank you for being so open, honest, and true. And we know that your story is going to help a lot of people. So thank you for being on our show. And if you want to know more about Dana and her book, you can access the link from the show notes, which will take you to her website where you can get a copy of her book. So Dana, once again, thank you for being on our show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Today's conversation has been a profound journey through adversity, healing, and transformation. It's these stories that remind us of the incredible capacity we all have to rewrite our stories.
Absolutely, Stephen. Drawing from our own experiences and those we've shared today, we want to actually leave you with lessons, essential lessons that are close to our hearts and mission.
I think the first lesson is about your intuition, or the intuition that we all have. Like, trusting your gut is more than a saying. It's a guiding principle. When something feels off, It's often a sign from our deeper self or our spirit urging us to pay attention and possibly take action.
And the second lesson is about the importance of self-respect. There comes a moment in our lives when we must choose ourselves, right? And our well-being and our happiness over staying in situations that no longer serve us. The choice is not selfish. It's actually essential for our healing and growth.
And it's about boundaries, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah. And the third lesson is envisioning what you truly want in your life. Like we've learned both personally and through the stories of those we've encountered, that defining the desire is the first step towards making it a reality. Allow your dreams, aspirations, guide you towards that transformation.
And as we wrap up today's episode, let's reflect on the idea that rewriting your story is an ongoing process of becoming healing and evolving. It's about actively participating in your journey and embracing the change you seek.
We hope today's discussion really inspires you to face your challenges with bravery and remember that every day is an opportunity to start anew. Your story is uniquely yours and you have the power to shape its next chapters.
Thank you for joining us on the Rewrite Your Story podcast.
We hope you found this episode enlightening.
For more information on the topics discussed, please visit our website at stephenandcharlene.com.
Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform, share it with your friends, and follow us on social media at Stephen and Charlene.
Until next time, stay informed and inspired.
This is Stephen and Charlene signing off from the Rewrite Your Story podcast. Thank you and stay blessed.